At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
On this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by one of the game's great characters. He is loyalty personified, playing over 400 times in the Premier League for his boyhood club. It can only be one man, Mr. West Ham, Mark Noble.
Nobes, congratulations. First few months retirement. How are you feeling? How's it treating you?
To be honest, Joe, I ain't stopped really. I went on holiday with a wife for 6 days. And then I went to Boston and graduated from Harvard.
Hold on a minute. We talked about this last night.
Yeah.
Harvard, yeah.
Stayed on campus for 5 days.
Has anyone from Canning Town ever been to Harvard?
I've been to Boston, but the one in England. Not been to America.
How was that? Because not a lot of people would know that. I mean, like, you love your football. You want to stay in the game. You like the business side of things. You've got loads of little things going on. So was it football and business or just sport?
To be honest, Joe, I didn't learn enough at school, really. Right. And then you go straight into football like we do, and you concentrate solely on football.
Yeah.
I started obviously doing business and bits and pieces sort of later on in my career. And then I knew there was this business of entertainment, media and sports at Harvard University in Boston. Yeah. And applied for the course about 3 years ago, and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have worked out any perfect. So I know the course is a really hard course to get onto. And I got the email in pre-season last year to say that I got accepted and done 5 days on campus at the beginning of June, which was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, people don't understand footballers often. You throw all your eggs in the basket. But when, like you said, I know you've been successful with your business stuff off the pitch. But when you want to do something, you want to apply something, you put your mind to it and you go for it. I mean, is that, I suppose, after sport, is that where you want to go? Are you just...
To be honest, like, when Carly and my old man were saying, like, what's it about, the course and all that, and it was about learning, Joe, and I went on my own. I went on my own and turned up and done the course with 75 other people, business leaders and sportsmen from around the world. It was incredible and obviously quite intense, but the professor that does it, she was amazing. She's like, I'd say to anyone that wants to do something like that, go and do it, because it's incredible. But for me, it was just about learning. I never had a chance to do anything else really, apart from dedicate my life to football. And then knowing that I was retiring and finishing, and just wanted to try something different.
I'm sure you'd be successful. Let's go all the way back, Nobes. A lad from Canning Town and playing for West Ham, it's the absolute dream. I mean, what was it like for you growing up? You're so close to the stadium and all your family I know are West Ham. I mean, talk to us about that.
Joe, I said at the end of the season, I said that I've not just, and I keep saying it, but I've not just lived every West Ham fan's dream. It's every fan's dream to play for the team you support growing up, and then captain the team and stay there your whole career is obviously so rare now. Sometimes I still think, how has that happened to me? Do you know what I mean? How have I come from there and done what I've done at West Ham and stayed there and obviously just retired? It don't feel real at times. When I look at the training ground now, the arena, the Mark Noble Arena, the young Mark Noble Young Hammer of the Year now, that's not for me, Joe. I've lived my career, but that's for my family and future generations of my family to say, my granddad once played, or my dad or my great granddad played for West Ham. You know, it's for me, for my family, it's pretty special.
Well, you've left a legacy. What do you think separated you from the? I mean, people might not know. You played with my brother at West Ham, so I've watched you from when you was 11 and 12 on occasions. And there was other good players around you. You was always one of the most talented in the group. What do you think that you've got that separated you? How did you play the player that played 400 times in the Premier League, captain your club? What did you have, do you think?
For me, Joe, like 100%, you're born with something. Yeah. You are, because not everyone can do it, can play at that level. So for me, it was just, I realised at an early age that my football brain was quite faster than most players, and I realised that if I was playing against a bigger player that I couldn't take too many touches of the ball. Yeah. I mean, I know that sounds really simple, but a lot of players don't realise
that.
They don't work it out. I don't know, Joe, and I just see things. But I had an incredible desire like inside me to, no matter what happened, I had loads of setbacks and... And I look back now at Joe, and I think there was times where I was incredibly selfish as a dad at times, as a friend, as a brother, probably as a son. I was incredibly selfish because I was so hungry to make a success for myself. And then I said it the other day to someone, Joe. I said, like, when Carly had the two kids, we was really young at 22. It become even worse for me. And I look back now and I think, I was so selfish at times, but I thought, God, now I've got a family. I've got to be successful even more than I had before. So, and I give up everything, Joe. I give up everything. I give up social life, going away with my mates on holiday, to make it as a footballer and to be successful for myself. And thank God it paid off.
Do you think having the kids early, well, the desire to do it for your families even more so as a young man, you had to grow up quicker?
I'd say, and it helped that I was with Carly since we was young at school. So, and then we had the kids young, she moved out young, and for 3 years, Joe, we didn't know what hit us. And and obviously I was just becoming an established pro then, and I felt like I needed to be even more selfish in a way, and I didn't realise I was doing it at the time. When I look back now, I do realise, but then I was like, Carly was indoors on her own with two babies, and I'd come in and want to go to sleep in the afternoon, and she'd just say, Mark, can you have the kids while I have a bath? And obviously she understood how much football meant to me, but I think you need that, Joe, in a way. I think you have to have that, otherwise you fall by the wayside. And I was determined that no matter what centre midfielder we bought or come into the club, that it'd have to be so special to take my shirt, and I'd sworn by that.
It's a great insight, and you're right, all young players do need that, but you nearly ended up at Arsenal. I remember you being at Arsenal as a kid. How did that come about?
Just when I started playing for the Sunday League team and in the district, I had all clubs coming after me. And Arsenal was the first one, really, that shown a big interest, and I went there and I really enjoyed it, Joe. It was a great club, and but my dad worked and it was too hard to get me from East London to North London at 4 o'clock in the evening. It was just impossible. He was always late. So there was a time when my contract was up at Arsenal. I say contract, I was kids, you know what I mean? It didn't mean nothing. I was like 11 at the time, I think. And then and West Ham was like after me for years. They said, because they knew I was a West Ham fan.
Yeah.
And then, I decided, my dad left it to me. He said, look, you do what you want to do. And I was out of contract. I actually went to watch West Ham under 12s play against Gillingham or Peterborough or someone. And Chris Cohen was playing.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there on the side. No one obviously knew that I was there to watch. And then, I think they won like 9-0. Yeah. Chrissy was a joke.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, I'm not even going to get in his team, let alone sign for West Ham. And I see that, and I see West Ham's training ground, and I just thought, oh, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
And they were saying I could have 2 free tickets for every home game. That meant a lot to me then. Yeah, signed. And the rest is history, obviously. And as soon as I signed for West Ham, I just sort of felt like I was home, and things become a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you and Chrissy were the two top players in the group, and you had a good age group. So you come through the famed academy, you know, which I came through, and people ask me a lot, you know, what did West Ham get right in that era? And I'm like, the only thing I can put my finger on is the people. Do you know what I'm like? Your Tony Carrs, your Peter Praybrooks, your Jimmy Hampsons, your Paul Heffers, you know, the coach is Jimmy Frith, who was there right the way through when I come back the second time.
Yeah.
How important were them, was that system and them people in your development from the age of 12 till you got in at 17?
Joe, for me, that's what I've based my whole philosophy on as West Ham captain and being at West Ham, is the people you surround yourself by. And listen, like as you say there, I'm so pleased you said that, because the people, West Ham as a club hasn't got the Tottenham Hotspur training ground or the Leicester City training ground, or hasn't got any of that. But what we have got is got an incredible way with people. And as you say, Jimmy Frith was still there, Shirley was still there, Peter Williams was still there, that you come back and you feel at home straight away. And even, obviously I'm finished now, but even up to last year, we had our chefs at the training ground come out and have a bit of banter with the lads. You've been there, you've seen it. Like, and we all take the piss out of each other, and you've got that strong like team and club ethos, which I think is so important in a football club. Yeah. You might not always be doing well on a pitch, but at least you've got a strong bond off the pitch. And for me, that was so important. People don't realise or put enough importance of how them staff are to a club. And that's why I always include the staff and everything and thank them, because they're so important.
Yeah, it's the foundations, ain't it? You see so many clubs, great clubs, slip down, you know, your Nottingham Forest, your Man City's, your Leeds, like even into like the third tier of English football. And you look at it from the outside, you think, oh, that's a mess. And I think West Ham have had eras where they've bought the wrong players, got relegated, or something's happened, and it could have gone like that. But what I think saved the club from doing that is that foundation, the people that you don't see, the people on the outside. And I think you was a big point. I don't think it was by design necessarily. Like, I don't think the owners are sitting there thinking, right, we've got all of these great people working there, they're so important, let's make sure they're happy. I think it was just by a little bit of luck. And also, I think you need to take a lot of credit for that, because I've seen how you operate in the dressing room and round the place, bringing everyone together, letting people, setting the tone. And I think that's not understood as much to the outsiders, but it is so important. I mean, and then you would have come in and you would have seen back end of my era. I mean, and you was just a young kid, just as I was leaving, coming through. But how was that training with, you know, Defoe, Di Canio, Trevor, Carrick, myself? I mean, you would have seen like the international players. It must have had an impression on you.
Yeah, because I remember Glenn Rodar. He rang my house. Obviously, I was still living at home at the time. I was like 15 or 16. And he said, it was half term. And he said, I'd like Mark to come in and train with you lot. I'd never even been in the same training ground as you lot. Yeah. So for me, it was like, I remember my dad saying, just had a manager call from the West Ham manager saying that he wants you to go in half term and train with the first team. And I was like, yeah, all right, good one, I'm going out on the street and playing football. And he was like, no, I'm serious, like Jimmy's just rang me, he said like he wants you in. So I was like, I was blown away by it. But also I remember coming into the gym and you all, like you and Monks and Di Canio and Trev, and I felt pretty comfortable. I know that sounds like, I didn't feel like,
I can tell you how comfortable you was, right? I remember Steve Lomas, he's a great, great guy. He's come in, he's walked into me. He's gone, he said, who's this kid? He went, Mark Noble. Yeah, he's a good player, mate. He said to me, he's more confident than you. I was in the changing room.
I don't think he passed me the ball or something. And I was like, and do you know what? I remember doing it, Joe. And I remember thinking, you idiot, what are you doing? Like, these are first team players. Yeah. I'd do it with my own age group. But they respected that straight away. And there's a time that you would have had it, Joe. Obviously not. I was trained for a week and I remember playing a 1-2 with someone and like chipping it over the top, and Trevor Sinclair scored. And I think it was Johnny Monks walked past, slapped me over the back of the head and said, well played, boy. And I was like 15. And for me, that was unreal. And then you won't remember this, Joe, but about 3 weeks after that, I was playing on the AstroTurf outside on the back at the back of Chapel Heath, and we was playing Arsenal, and you'd just finished, the first team had just finished training, and I was playing on the pitch, and I see you from where I was playing come and stand on the side with Jimmy Hampton, yeah, and watch, and a ball come to me in midfield, and I'd done a bit of skill, and I see you clapping, and like you, and I look back now and think, oh, well, I go and watch the youth team, and I go, yeah, and watch them play, yeah, and I appreciate, and I remember you doing it, and I'm thinking, oh my God, mate, that's Joe, he's clapping me,
yeah,
and obviously then sharing the changing room with you years later was surreal for me, yeah, do you know what I mean? Obviously that's enough, I'm not going to speak about you no more, but that like as a young kid going from training with the first team to back playing with the under 8 or 17s or whatever it was then, to actually then start getting acknowledgement from the first team, it's a, yeah, massive step for a youngster.
Yeah, it's massive, and it's usual for most young footballers coming through. You all have that moment where you're in the dressing room with players you've watched and it's like, wow, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But we've all had that. But I think West Ham do it, and you do it particularly well with the young players. Like you've been brilliant at that. So you're getting into the first team, Nobes, at a difficult time for the club.
Yeah.
You know, there was the relegation and then the subsequent promotion and the playoff final, which, I mean, I'd never played in a playoff final, but I love the playoff final, and it's widely regarded as the most expensive game in world football.
Yeah.
I mean, how was that playing in that game, knowing you've got people's, I don't know if you, as a young man, whether it affects you, but knowing that people's jobs are on the line, course, lads' contracts.
To be honest, the first one, Joe, against Preston, I didn't realise I was still a young lad. And,
yeah.
And I remember I was sub, and I look back now and I think I was 17, I think. Maybe 17 or 18 or whatever I was. It was still young. And Pards put me on with 1-0 up with 15, 20 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And I look and I think now, would that happen now? You know, like 1-0 up, what would you put an experienced pro on to kill the game? Do you know what I mean? And I look back and I think,
but you've always played like an experienced pro.
Yeah,
you?
Maybe. You know, yeah. I mean? But I remember part, and I remember thinking about this as I grew up, thinking he must have had a lot of belief in me, Joe, Pards, yeah, to do that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He must have had a lot of belief in my ability to do that. And I remember I was speaking to Teddy that was at the club at the time, and he was like, he kept saying to me, "No, I'm telling Pards, he's got to get you in the team. He's got to get you in the team." And obviously, I started playing, and then we went up and through the playoffs, which was unreal. And then obviously years later, started in a playoff final, which was, I felt a lot more about then than I did when I was young. So like, yeah, I worried a lot more about the staff with their jobs, yeah, and.
Did you feel that creeping up on you, that responsibility, or was,
yeah, because when you're a young lad, you're just playing off enthusiasm, really, and nothing's expected of you.
Yeah.
You're not that senior pro where, and then obviously you become club captain and it gets a lot worse. But then you actually start. For me, I really worried about staff members losing their jobs.
Yeah.
Because these are the people you spend with every day, Joe. Like, yeah, and you become. They're like your family, mate. Yeah, like you spend more time than them, you do actually your own family. So, to when you actually get promoted and you know everyone's safe, it's pretty nice.
BT Sport Pods. You get the promotion, the elation. You're still a young man. You're running on high. You're back in the Premier League, and I think that's when people started to notice you. Again, as a young player, I think all the top young players, you need to be in the Premier League before people go, right,
yep,
bang.
Agreed.
You know, then all of a sudden, you've had a great season. You know, the new money comes in. Like, it was insane, weren't it? And then Mascherano and Tevez, the two best young players in Argentina, turn up. I mean, talk to me about that when they're walking in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And what was your first impressions of them?
So, Joe, the funny thing is, I got injured at the end of the season and I needed to play games, and West Ham was playing really well at the time. Pards had we had a really good first season back in the Prem. So I said to him, I need to go and get some games. I'm not going to play here, so I need to get some games. So I went to Ipswich and Jim McGilton was the manager and I loved him. He was
good, brilliant.
Player. Yeah, really good player, but he was nuts, but he was,
yeah.
like I really felt like he loved me and played like 10 games. I can't remember how many games it was, but then I come in from training once, and then I see Tevez and Mascherano. I knew I was going back the next week.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, "Here's McDonald's."
Yeah, you know,
like,
yeah.
Mascherano's just signed, and Tevez, and so obviously West Ham was really struggling at the time, and I went back, and Pard said, I think I'm going to send you on loan again." And Joe, do you know these moments in your career where you've probably had them good and bad, where you think, "I shouldn't have done that," or "I should have done that."
Yeah.
He pulled me in his office, and I felt like I was ready to play then. He said, "Mark, I'm thinking you should go to the end of the season and back out on loan and get some games." And I was like, "Nah."
Yeah.
I said, "I feel like I'm ready to play now." I think Christian Daly was playing centre midfield at the time with Nigel Iheanacho, and I think we'd just been beat by Bolton, and then Pard's obviously lost his job. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made, because that was like 2 weeks before that, Joe.
Yeah.
And if I would have gone out on loan, that great escape would have never been in my history. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, Kerb's come in, and he was obviously a Canning Town boy, the same as me. And I'm thinking, buzzing, he's come, I'm going to get a game. I didn't play for like 2 months, you know what I mean? I was like, and you know when you're training and I'm thinking, how can I, like, I'm the best player in training by a mile. How can I not play?
Yeah.
And then he brought me in his office and he said, "I'm going to play you." And then I played against, I scored in the cup against Brighton. I thought, yeah, sweet, lovely, I'm going to play now. Didn't play again in the Prem. We lost a couple more games. And we was, I think we was like third from bottom, Joe. And he was like, I've got nothing to lose. I might as well just play Nobes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was a coincidence with Carlos Tevez actually picking up a bit of form, getting in the team, and then that was it. Like, and then we just hit, like Bobby, hit a bit of form, and everything sort of clicked into gear, and it ended up being an incredible end to the season.
So for West Ham fans, and that during that period, they would be thinking like, because Mascherano was, he didn't really settle, did he?
No, happened. We played against Everton away, and obviously the game was so quick.
Yeah.
And I think he lost the ball and they went and scored. And he didn't really settle. Joe, in training, he was a joke. You could tell how good he was going to be or how good he was. But for some reason, it just didn't work for him. Whereas Carlos was a little bit different. He was different. He sort of picked up the game a lot quicker. So, and then we got a settled team and we started winning. And we sort of had the same team for the whole last 13 games, I think, and obviously stayed up.
It's incredible, incredible. I don't think there's not been many teams that have come back from where West Ham come back, and then to do it, to go to Old Trafford and win, and then go to the Emirates and win. After that season, Nobes, you must have felt, was that when you felt like an established Premier League player, or was it, you think, I've arrived now?
Yeah, no, do you know what, Joe? Like, I'll tell you what happened. I felt, you know when you're playing well, right? You've been there and you're like on autopilot. You don't even need to think about stuff. It comes to you, you're playing it around the corner. And then for me, we stayed up and I was like, oh, brilliant. But then I went away on holiday and after 2 or 3 days, I'm like, start seeing the reports in the paper. We're signing this one. And all of a sudden you're like, well, three of them are centre midfield players. So like, where am I going to play? Do you know what I mean? And so then I actually was away on holiday and I couldn't wait to get back to go into Kerbs' office and say, look, listen, I want to play. Like, you're signing all these midfield players.
Yeah.
And I think we signed Scotty, we signed Kieran Dyer, we signed Bellas, we signed loads of players, Nobby Solano, I think. And there was probably a bit of insecurity creeping, Joe, where I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be the same old thing, you know, like, done well, and I'm a young lad, they're going to leave me out. And I was just determined not to be left out.
Yeah.
That was all that was on my mind. And that holiday for Carly was probably one of the worst ones we've ever had, because I didn't even want to be there, Joe. I just wanted to go back, because I'd only played the last 14 games of the season. Obviously, it was incredible. And as you're right, I've become a proper Premier League player then.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough for me, really. Yeah. I'd had a taste of it, and I didn't want to give it up.
Well, that was a chaotic spell for West Ham. You know, you had the Icelandic owners and you had all these big names coming in. Obviously, it didn't work out for Kieran Dyer. You know, Nobby Solano was probably on the downside of his career. So some strange signings. Bellamy, great player, just didn't really click for him there. And then, but you emerged and become more important. And then Zola comes in, you know, and you must. Like, talk to me about the training session where he.
He
could still play, couldn't he?
He was. The thing I found with Gianfranco is, and you know him, he cared so much about everyone, and he wanted to try and improve everyone because he was obviously so good. And there was times where we actually thought we were struggling. The first season we come ninth and we were playing proper football. It was brilliant. But Joe, you know, like when the ownership and you can feel everything sort of breaking from the top, you knew stuff weren't right. Our sponsors got whipped off first. We played with our numbers on the front of the shirt. We looked like a pub team at times. Mm-hmm. And then we signed, obviously, Savio for like 10 million quid, and which was never a 10 million pound player.
Talk to me about that, Nobes, because you must have seen some players come. The West Ham, it's very hit and miss with the players. Like, how long did you as a player take to have a look at someone and think, oof?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Straight away, and don't get me wrong, in my career I've seen hundreds of players, but and a couple I got wrong.
Yeah.
But normally, Joe, if you're a footballer, you can tell straight away, like, with the way they move, the way they touch the ball, the way they even pass, you know, and I realised that there was a hidden agenda somewhere with that signing because it was 10 million quid, I think. Someone involved in the club's family worked at Brescia. They was going skint, and all of a sudden we paid 10 million quid for a player that...
Yeah.
And it wasn't fair on him, Joe.
It wasn't fair
on him to come in and be our striker because it was the level was too high.
How frustrating was that for you, being a proper West Ham fan?
Yeah, Joe, I've had that all my life, though. And that's at times when you're a West Ham fan, it gets on top of you and you're like, I just thought we was going to start doing it properly and it wasn't meant to be. So for me, I've always sort of been fighting a battle most of the time with players coming in, and you try and do your best for them, you try and integrate them to the club, and then you realise that they're just not good enough for this level, and it's so hard. You know, then they've got them on a 4-year contract on good money. It's hard to get them out, and we've been like that for many years, and now you've seen, hopefully in the last few years, things have started to change.
The recruitment's been a lot better the last few years, definitely. So, Avram Grant comes in. Now, he's coming into a difficult situation. You're now an established... If you're not captain with the armband on at this time, you're knowing your character, and it was in a real bad way.
Yeah.
And you ended up getting relegated. I mean,
do you know what? We, obviously, under Gianfranco the year before, we survived by the skin of our teeth, right? Mm. But I do believe we only survived that year because everyone loved...
Franco.
Yeah. Everyone loved him because he was such a good geezer. And for his first, actually, big job, it was a tough place to come into, Joe, with the ownership. And it was hard, mate. And
it scarred him, I feel like.
Yeah, I know. And then, obviously, the new owners come in. And got rid of Franco, and then Avram come in, and I just think the damage was already done, Joe.
Yeah.
Like, the damage was already done, and a lot of players didn't want to be there anymore. The recruitment wasn't great, and from the day one, we didn't lose a game in pre-season, if I remember rightly, and then we got smashed by Aston Villa away 3-0.
Yeah.
And just got played off the park, and I thought, nah, this ain't good. This, straight away. Yeah. And it was like, and that season was sort of just running. It felt like it was. I mean, I've been used to running through mud in my career, but it actually felt like you was running in quicksand because it seemed like no matter what we'd done, we were just nowhere near it. And then halfway through the season, Joe, like you, as a West Ham fan and a West Ham player at the time, I was like, mate, do you know what? Actually. When we got relegated, I had double hernia. I got injured at Chelsea away, and so I missed the last 6 weeks of the season. And Watching it from the outside was painful, obviously, because I couldn't do anything about it. But for me, when it got to that, I just felt like the club needed a reset.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I know this sounds nuts to say now, but it was like we needed something like a relegation to happen to get the club sort of back where it should be. Mm. Like, I know that sounds really strange, but when you're in a change room, you know something's not right.
Yeah.
And it needed a big Sam.
Yeah.
In all honesty, it needed a big Sam to come in and get the foundations right again and get a philosophy back, whether the fans like that philosophy or not.
Mm.
It was proven over the 4 or 5 years he was there because we was never in trouble. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that actually give a good sounding board for the last, obviously, since he left. And we've had a little bit of trouble, but in the main, it's been pretty, I say successful, but we've been where West Ham should be.
Yeah. Like, two things there. First thing, so you're watching the team get relegated and you being a Canning Town boy, I mean, it must have been so tough because I know your mates would have been ringing you because you venting as well. People vent, don't they?
Yeah,
like, and you're
course,
like, I'm trying, mate. This like,
but that, not just my mates. The geezer in the garage, the geezer in the shop, the geezer in the restaurant. Like, going to watch my son play.
It was
no matter where I go, everyone wants to talk about West Ham. And if it's not Gam right, it's like, no, what's going on over there? God, you need to liven him up. What's going? You know, like wherever I've been for the last 18 years, that's happened.
Was that tough?
Yeah, because at times when it ain't going well, like I'm sitting there with Carly in a restaurant, and I don't even want to be there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or I'm out with the boys. I'm thinking, got a big game on Saturday. We need to win. I can't really be here now. Do you know what I mean? And because I cared so much for me, the 18 years of me playing for West Ham, I've never really switched off. Like when you finish the season and you've had a great season and you go on holiday, you think, oh, next year I hope we need to sign a few players and I hope we do as well next season and I need to play well again. And you don't ever switch off. I didn't anyway.
Yeah.
I still get nervous at 35 before I train because I want to be the best player. And, do you know what I mean? I still get like that. And, so I would have felt like that even if I went to another club, but obviously at West Ham it was massively amplified that I wanted to just actually do well.
Yeah. So Big Sam comes in. You're right. I think he's the perfect man. He's made a career, you know, sort of stabilising clubs. His character's perfect for that. He's the staff he brings in. What he does is perfect for that. He comes in, gets promotion. You know, he never quite. It's a difficult one with Sam because he never connected with the fans because of the style of football, because of the, you know, and then he would probably, if he was sitting here, would say, well, what is the style of football?
Yeah.
You know, you go up, you go down. I know, but there's a small number of elite clubs that can win things, right? So West Ham's not been in that bracket since the 60s, really, like, when real capabilities of winning something. So for everyone else, it becomes about a culture, about fans turning up, paying their money, and they want to see players that entertain. They want to see a fighting team. Now, Sam's teams were never set up to entertain, but they were set up to get
results.
Get their results. And you're right, when he come in, it was a match. It was a match made in heaven for that period, weren't it? And what did
and
he,
Joe,
what did he
I'm
change?
Saying that, I'm saying that as a West Ham fan, not as a player.
Yeah.
Because, like, West Ham does, like, it's too big a club to be in the Championship.
Yeah.
So, for me, it was like, he come in and... not only Big Sam, but people like Kevin Nolan was a massive factor in that because he obviously had worked with Sam before, and we signed good players.
Yeah, who could do the roles?
Who do the roles that Sam wanted to do?
Yeah.
I mean, at one point we had Abdoulaye Faye, Papa Bouba Diop, Kevin Nolan. I was like a 12-year-old.
You must have looked like the mascot coming out.
I was like a mascot
for the game.
And John Carew, who was a man mountain. You know, teams looked at us and thought, oh my God, like we're playing against them.
And they would never have thought that.
No, of course.
In previous years.
But Sam knew what was needed to get back to the Premier League. And then once we got in the Premier League, we changed a little bit the way, because we had to. But Joe, you know what it's like. If you don't come straight out of that Championship, it's dangerous. And I was lucky enough to have two promotions. But And then obviously had a really good 4 years. And
yeah.
Sam, so when I say it wasn't, we was always safe mid-table and all that. But what Sam was great at was giving the boys, was trusting his players.
Yeah.
We had a fantastic life, as in we socialised a lot together, and whether that was a good thing or bad thing. But after myself being involved in obviously a relegation battle under Zola, and just survived one with Curbs 3 years earlier at Manchester United, I was like sick to death of fighting relegation, you know what I mean? So that settled 4 or 5 years was pretty nice to know in sort of January, February time, you was pretty much safe, you know what I mean? And then we'd have the trips with Sam, he'd always take us to Dubai or somewhere, we'd have a good time. And you've witnessed a couple of them, I know, because I've still got the photos.
They're worth a few quid in that for the right hand.
Yeah, but it's... Listen, it was... as you say, he didn't quite win over the West Ham fans, but you're right, and Sam will... he'd done what was needed. And when I look back, I think Sam was a massive factor to play in West Ham's success now, really.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously... I come back 10 years after I'd left. You know, I wasn't the same player that I was because I had a big injury, and I'd just come back from France, and I wanted to come home back to London. So I knew signing for Sam, this could go either way, like, you know, because I'm not really a sat, like you said, Abdoulaye Faye Bouba Diop. It weren't me. And I remember our first session together before the Man United game, and we're doing a shape, and the ball's come into me in midfield. And I've got it and just took a turn outside the boot out to the left back, and I just heard the whistle. Shh, 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 shh. Who's he whistling at, right? And he's gone, "We don't do that here, son." As the ball comes into me, see there? He's pointing into, like, no one was standing there. He's pointing, "We just turn it in there." And I thought, and I'm looking at you and you're chuckling. And he made a point of doing it in the first session. And I thought, okay, I've got to try and change me game a little bit here. And then I tried my hardest to fit in. I was getting hamstring injuries, and it always felt, I loved my time back there for the 18 months I come back. I loved the lads. I always found I was sort of like climbing up a wall with a backpack on, because I was trying to make runs in behind, and I was like, really, I should be playing in midfield with you. But he had Nobby and you in there, and Nobby's a great goal scoring midfielder, and he knew what to do. Nobby was perfect with Big Sam. So I was like, so I was trying to do something I couldn't do at that stage.
Yeah.
But I could see firsthand how good he was at setting up a team.
Yeah.
And I never felt that we was ever any danger. I always thought we'd get out of it. Like Andy Carroll come in, he was brilliant for Big Sam when he was fit. So, I mean, I saw it firsthand. And I understand what you mean about him being perfect for that style of football.
Yeah, it was just perfect for that time at West Ham.
Yeah,
he was perfect.
Yeah,
and we needed him at that time. And he had a great 4 or 5 years there. He really did. But and then obviously, it was a big decision from the owners to not renew his contract.
Do you know when I knew his time was up, Nobes? Right, I remember we played a game. I was injured. I was sitting behind the bench. We won the game 1-0. It was probably the ugliest game of football I'd ever seen in my life. Yeah. And
like
about four fans come down and just lost the plot with him, losing him. And he's having a go at the fans.
He cupped his ear old, didn't he?
Cupped his ear, like 1-0. You know, it was almost like, I felt the fans were like, had been so fed up with the style of football. Do you know what I mean? They should always appreciate what Sam done for the club. But I thought his time's up now. It ain't going to be long before the owner's going to have to go back to what they're all about. Yeah. But he'd done a great job.
I mean, when I speak to fans now and we talk about my career and that, and I hear people say about Sam and his style of play and all that rubbish, I won't have a bad word said about him, because at that time he was what West Ham needed. And someone needed to come in and start and build foundations again, really, for us to kick on. And so I felt like at West Ham's, in West Ham's time and in my career, I felt like Sam was he had the a great four or five years.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Horses for Courses springs to mind with that, with Sam and his management style.
BT Sport Pods.
Nobes, England. I don't know how you feel about this, but whenever I think of players that I've seen play or I've played with, and I think of players that deserved a chance in international level, your name always springs up, you know. I know you was captain for 21s. How does that sit with you now as a retired footballer? Is it something that you... How do you process it? Because from my perspective, it's not just because you're my pal.
Yeah.
I think most football fans say Mark Noble... I mean, I list the players that I played with, some of them for England, and I think he deserves he deserved an opportunity at that level.
Do I think my own self, do I feel like I deserved a chance at some point? 100%. In seasons.
No one would argue with you there.
Like, look, I look at it as I've had 9 different managers, right? Or 10 different managers, and played under every one of them. So I'm talking English, foreign, different styles.
Yeah.
And obviously played 400 Premier League games, over 400 Premier League games. And you don't, there's no way you play under all them managers and play that many games if you can't do it, right?
Mm.
Do I believe I should have played for England? Yeah, of course I do. But does it affect me? Like, not one little bit.
Yeah.
And people might say, yeah, all right, whatever, he's just saying that. But you know, I speak openly. I'm honest. Yeah. I don't. It doesn't affect me one little bit. I said on something else the other day. I was like, would I change my career with some players that have had one or two England caps and not had the Premier League and career I've had? Like,
yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
No.
If you look at my lot, if you look at the send off and the last season I've had with West Ham, and Joe, there's not many players in the world that gets that sort of send off and that sort of reception. So, no, I wouldn't. I'd love watching you for England. I love watching England, and but to be honest, I never really fussed me. I dreamed about playing for West Ham, and I dreamed to captain West Ham and all that. And obviously, I've done that. Would a England cap be the icing on the cake? Of course, but do I worry now that it didn't happen? Like, not at all, not one little bit.
Mm. Now what? So was there any contact from the FA? Was it ever close? No one's ever like...
Never, Joe. Like, and do you know what? I actually felt like I was a much better player playing with better players. I know that sounds nuts.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Like, as soon as we signed a decent player, I'd always feel like my game went up a level, you know, like when we signed Tevez, when we signed Payet.
Yeah.
I felt like my game improved. Mm. But it is what it is, Joe.
Do you know where they missed the trick, right? Because technically, you're more than capable of playing international football. And from what I've learned from England, I played for England from 2000 to 2010. And I've seen players who've come in and fold up playing for England mentally. Great players, actually, sometimes. But your mindset, what we talked about earlier in the interview, would have been absolutely perfect for international football, because it's all it's about, the pressure goes up even more notches from Champions League.
Yeah.
And it's about players who can puff their chest out and receive the ball in any situations, look at all the big penalties. It's clear that your mindset. So I personally, and again, it's not just because you're mate, I think the FA missed the trick. Should have got you in and had a looky at some point. But you're right in that it's not here nor there now. And the career you've had and the send-off is, like I said, there'd be millions of footballers around the world who'd want what you've got at West Ham. It's special. Nobes, last season at Upton Park, you know, and one of my biggest regrets is I was in America then. I couldn't get back for the last few games because, it means a lot to me. It must mean the world to you, that place, you know, all them memories. It's like leaving your house you lived in all your life.
Yeah.
But you played the last season with, first of all, tell me about that, but also talk to me about Dimitri Payet, because I played with him at Lille. What a player, and what a team you had going on that year. How was that last year for you?
You got to remember, Joe, in that year I had a testimonial as well
yeah.
in the last season at the Bowling. And I could sort of tell, we had Stewie, and he went in to see Slaven, and Slaven said, look, Dimmy's going to be my number 10, and I want you to play off the right. And then Stewie had a good offer at Middlesbrough, I think, and I was gutted to see Stewie go because yeah. he was such a good player
yeah.
and he suited us and he would have been so good under Slav.
Yeah.
And then Dimmy come in, and you know what it's like when you first sign a player, and I just thought, oh my God, like, he's top. And I just hope, because I see him play in training, and I just thought, I hope he can produce that in games
because
I know the Premier League's a tough league to play in. And we had a really good start, Arsenal away. We beat Arsenal away. And then we had two tough games, Leicester and Bournemouth at home. We lost them both. Pretty sure of it. My memory's not great, but I'm pretty sure of it. And then we beat Liverpool away, Man City away.
Yeah.
And we just, it kept rolling over. We had big Andy Carroll and Sacco, and we had me and Cheku Kioti. And we had a strong team.
Yeah.
And it just kept rolling, Joe. And then you sort of knew something special was going to happen, especially like in the last game. United was just, I can only describe it as like crackling. It was that the atmosphere was that good.
Yeah.
And then to win the way we did, to be behind and then go and score two in late and win 3-2, it was so special. And it's crazy, Joe, because I wished I'd, I remember loads of it, but I'd wished I'd took more in because it was phenomenal. And it's a real shame that that place had to go.
Yeah, it's an amazing stadium, wasn't it?
Slav was, obviously he come in and Kev left, and speaking to Kev now, he says he should have done what I had done and just stayed and been a senior player around.
Yeah, because
Kev was brilliant, but I think Kev wanted to go on and do other things. Obviously he took a manager's job, and he had such a good 4 years there, 5 years as club captain, and helped me massively. And then Slav obviously made me club captain, and we got a house on fire, and we played so well in games. We were so good at that. And Dimmy was obviously incredible. He was.
Yeah.
We had such a good time as well, and then obviously we moved into the new stadium, and it became really difficult.
Yeah.
Really difficult because no one was ready for it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, going back to the new stadium, we'll get into that in a minute. I remember when I was there was when they'd done the deal with the council and all the deal. We had a press conference, and Boris, you remember Boris Johnson behind
there with him,
me, you, and Boris Johnson, and like I'm looking at him and I'm just, what's going on here? And we're all getting briefed for the media because it was a bit controversial the whole way
it was done. Yeah.
And Boris, who was London mayor at the time, being Boris, his Barnet was all over the gaff, and we were just sat up there behind him and Karen, and I'm thinking, I don't know about this.
Yeah, I don't know. And because we're West Ham boys, it was like, it was hard. Even as a player, you needed to, obviously, I knew in the long run it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Because it was a 60,000 seat, and I knew once we got it right, it would be the best thing to do for West Ham. But at the time, it was hard to take.
Yeah,
it was hard to leave Upton Park. I mean, I had a box there for 12 people, and we used to have 40 people in the box every week.
There
was no rules, was there?
My
uncle worked on the front doors. My aunt worked in the boxes. And you'd just walk in. I'd say, oh, I'm in Nobes' box. All right, sweet, go on in. Off you go.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd walk in my box after the game, and I'd let 10 people I didn't know in there. Do you know? But that's the way that place was, whereas obviously it's so different now.
Yeah.
And it was hard to leave. And I think if you even... to leaving Upton Park to go into the new stadium, at first we didn't get it right. I think everyone knows that. And it's probably took 4 or 5 years to actually get the feeling of being home again.
Yeah.
And it takes big European nights like we've just had to get that.
Yeah, well, that's seamlessly perfect going into my... I mean, for me, I'm retired now. I'm back in the media, and... that's one of the best experiences following West Ham in the media and that European campaign. And you got the impression, David Moyes done a great job, great team, but got the impression the fans, it was like, you know, when you get into a new house and you're a little bit like, yeah, where's the, you know, you don't know where the knives and forks are, where the beans go and all that. And it just found like it just made European campaign made it at home. Like, yeah. I see the fans jumping where we was. You see where we was doing the studio.
I could hear you. I used to love
you'd be doing an interview, and it just felt like home again for the fans. It must have felt like that for you after that.
Yeah, I mean, even the season before as well. It seemed like, Joe, when we come back from lockdown and we played without fans, and then we obviously survived the relegation when Moisey first come back. We went into that season and we done really well. We qualified for Europe.
Yeah.
And then, I don't think any of us thought we would have nights like we did, like Seville and you know that was so special. And we beat some big clubs at home that year. Last season. But nights like Seville and the European nights were just made the place home.
Yeah.
And I think everyone realised what a special place it can be on nights like that. And not only obviously for us players, but even for like what you said, yous and the staff and ex-players and the owners. And it just felt like every time we went there now, we was going to win, you know, like it had that feeling about it. And it was a shame our European football ended this year, but what a run we went on. And I said in my speech at the end of season awards, I said it sort of brought a football club back together.
Yeah.
And it had the, you see full grown men crying, and for me to end my career on that season, like with what we'd done, was just it was special.
And I remember talking to you, and I know now you're retired, you would always play it down like just another. I'm on the phone like an excited kid going, this is great, and you're going, yeah, but you know, we might lose at the weekend. And I'm like, forget about the weekend, this is Europe. I mean, I went away for years and I played in all the big European competitions, so I know how good it is and how special it is. But can you sit back now and appreciate like them nights in Seville, mate? Yeah, like, what was that one in Seville when you come on and run down the wing? I thought, what's going on? Is he on a moped?
No,
or something?
That was Leon.
Leon.
Yeah. Do you know what, Joe? It's like, because it was, I knew it was my last season. I already told everyone that. Yeah. And but Moisey was like, no, I need you. Like, I'm going to need you a lot. So make sure like you ain't having a day off. You ain't coming. And I was like, boss, I'm ready to play when you are.
Yeah.
So because we were doing so well in the Prem, I played quite a lot in Europe. Like I played a lot in away games. I played I played the first game against Rapid Vienna at home when Deck scored. And it was amazing how it worked. So I sat and spoke with Deck. I said, Deck, look, I'm playing tonight with you. And that was the first game at home. We'd just opened the statue. And then it was there, and you could sense the buzz. Like everyone was buzzing for this Europa League game. And I sat with him and I was like, Deck, listen, get yourself forward, Geese, because I'll mop up and you just get yourself in the box, because I know how good he was.
Yeah.
And it was just like mad how he got in the box the first time and scored. And we'd spoke about it 30 minutes before that. And it was... So everything went great on the night, and we had a great, obviously, group stages. And then, and what was fantastic as well, we'd already qualified, so we played 8 young kids against, even though we lost. But for them, it was amazing, Joe.
Like,
such an incredible evening for the club and for the staff, for the coaches. And then all of a sudden, you've been there at bigger levels, but you go through the group stage and you're like, right, it gets serious now.
Yeah.
And then we got Seville and we got Lyon, and then obviously we come up short against Frankfurt. But Seville and Lyon was like special, mate. Like, and Joe, like, from the away games, we'd fly back, say, from Genk or Vienna or Zagreb. We'd fly back to a hotel in Stratford. So we'd be getting McDonald's on Deliveroo and sitting there, we'd just won 3-0 or whatever. We were buzzing. It was like a great team spirit. Get up, train in the morning, and then we'd be obviously travelling on the Saturday. So we spent near on every day together.
Yeah.
We had an unbelievable team spirit with the boys. And it was like, at times, it was like going on a trip with your mates, you know? Yeah. Like, we were so confident about winning. And then, obviously we come up short against Frankfurt, but fucking what an experience.
Yeah.
And I do believe it brought everyone together. And I just kept waking up thinking, like, I've played for West Ham for 18 years.
Yeah.
How can this be my last season? You know, playing in these competitions and being where we are in the Prem. And then even the last game when Lucas saves Mahrez's penalty and against City and we draw 2-2.
Yeah.
I actually play.
Yeah.
Obviously, or come on, it was just so special, Joe. So special.
Quick fire questions, Nobes. So, if you had to bet your life on someone to score a penalty, who would take it?
Me.
No doubt. If there's one moment you'd go back and change in your career, what would it be? Don't say me signing for West Ham.
Scoring the pen against Man United.
Yeah, yeah. What one moment of your career would you go back to relive if you could?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to say last ever game at Bowling.
Yeah. Name a manager you'd wish you'd played under.
Ooh.
Good, innit?
Yeah, that's hard, mate. I'm going to say Mourinho.
Yeah, you'd have liked him. I actually saw him the other day.
He still owes me dinner.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he asked for a draw against West Ham at our place when they was about to come second in the league, and we had a 1-1 draw. Not that
you'd have loved him. You'd have been right. He'd have loved you. What's the best atmosphere you've ever played in?
Played in, as in played in, I'm going to have to say, I mean, I didn't play against Frankfurt in the semis, but that was
unreal.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
I ain't seen anything. That's up there. I think that's the best I've seen.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
But played in... I'm going to say the last game at the Bowling.
Yeah, yeah, that was
phenomenal.
Special. Best player you've ever played with? Apart from me, come on, of course.
Do you know what I would say you when you was 23? I'm going to say...
You can name a couple if you want to just, like... Because it is hard.
I had different times in my career, but...
Yeah.
Actually, for pure moments, probably Tevez or Payet.
As in
for moments on the pitch, and they were special.
Payet's a special, and Tevez, both special players.
But even growing up as a 17-year-old kid coming into the first team, playing with Teddy was like really, like I learned so much about just the appreciation of a football. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, Teddy's one of the most underrated players. I don't think he gets enough love. If you could go fishing with one former teammate, who would it be?
Bobby.
Bobby fishes, doesn't he? Loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the best team party you've ever had? You think you've got pictures of this in Dubai?
Am I allowed to say it or not?
You can say that if you want. Carrying me to bed.
Yeah.
At three in the morning.
I carried my hero to bed. Took his clothes off and put him in bed. Right. What a night.
What's the funniest thing you've ever heard on a football pitch?
Funniest thing I've ever heard on a football pitch. One of the funniest things I've ever heard, we was playing Burnley and I can't remember which team it was, and someone elbowed Gary O'Neill in the back of the head. And Gaz O'Neill said something to him. And he went, "I'll meet you in the tunnel." And then Gaz said, "No, mate, I'll meet you outside next to your call sign." That's one of the best things I've ever heard.
I think I might have played in that game.
I think you did.
I had a similar one. We played we played Perthley. I met the geezer who this happened to, and Ian Wright was playing. He was the best trash talker ever. And it was like friendly, pre-season friendly, and Wrighty had to play on the edge. So Wrighty, like, you're thinking perfectly, they're going to be kicking us. Wrighty was booting this centre half for no reason. I'm looking over thinking, why is he booting him? Like, what's he done to him? And the guy's lost the plot. Gone, "What's your problem? What's your problem?" Wrighty's gone, "What do you mean, what's my problem?" He's gone, "What's your problem?" He said, the only problem I've got is whether to buy my Ferrari in red or black.
I
just got like, this is too much. But it was just like,
them
sort of trash talking. Brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Nobes. Brilliant.
No, pleasure.
Lighty Sport Pods.